Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Bria Burris is the executive director of MATC's FAST Fund, which provides emergency small grants and funds to students, covering everything from books to gas to groceries. She also serves on the MATC district board with the distinction of being the only graduate of that school to serve on the board. But it wasn't easy to get there. And you've had such a full life, Bria. We have to start at the beginning. You were born in a place, it wasn't a hospital. It's not where a lot of babies are born.
I was born in Chiquita Correctional Facility. My mom was in prison when she was pregnant with me. And my great-grandmother took me from the hospital at 3 days old. And she raised me until I was about six, where I was then taken from that household that I knew and was placed into foster care.
I want to go back a little bit to your mom. Do you mind sharing why she was in prison?
Honestly, I don't know. I do know that she did have a history with drug abuse. And she, too, had a really rough upbringing herself. But for that particular time, I'm not exactly sure.
And you said your great-grandmother, who you lived with for the first several years of your life. She said something interesting to you about the day you were born, because you were born on June 19th.
Yeah.
And that had special significance.
Juneteenth is a day of celebration for slaves that were freed, the last of the slaves that were freed. And she just let me know that that's super significant. Like, you're born to create and have freedom. Like, that stuck with me from a very young age.
What was life like those first couple of years living with your great-grandmother?
Super engraved in family support. I was raised in a household where my grandmother, very much the matriarch of our family, took care of many of her children's children and their children. So I was raised in a household with tons of my cousins, aunts, uncles. And a beautiful thing, to be honest, my grandma owned multiple properties in all of her homes. She never rented out to anyone. She let her family stay in them. So I was always around family. So holidays, for me, don't feel like holidays because that's how I grew up amongst all of my people. And my grandmother would cook these big dinners all the time. It was never just a holiday. It was like an everyday thing.
So it must have been tough when you were one day just all of a sudden picked up and put into foster care. What do you remember about that? Because you were just a tiny little thing.
Yeah, I was 6 years old. It was the last day of school. I went to La Follette Elementary. And I don't think me or any of my siblings at that time knew what was going on. We didn't get any forewarning. Nobody really talked to us about it. They just picked us up from school, held us in the office, and then dropped us off. And not all of us was dropped off at the same place. So we were separated from our siblings at that time. I believe at that time it was probably five or six of us.
How frightening was that as a six-year-old going someplace not with your siblings and just strangers?
I was extremely frightened. But I think because of the upbringing that we had in my great-grandmother's home of being connected to family, we knew automatically that we needed to take care of each other. So it was me and two of my older siblings that got placed together. And we just knew that we weren't home and that we would have to take care of ourselves. We were very fortunate to land in a home that really did become family. My foster mom, Maddie Butler, made sure that we still stayed connected to our family as well. So I think that that also made that easy for us.
How long were you in foster care?
About seven, eight years.
And were you reunited with your mom at that point?
Yeah, I was, but it was short-lived when I was reunited with my mom, 13, 14 years old, and going into a space where my mom didn't have all the tools to be a mother. And I think just from upbringing, she had an expectation that was unrealistic for the level of relationship that we had with her. And I think that it made it difficult for all of us. So slowly, me and all of my siblings navigated out of her household.
Did you run away?
No, she actually put me out when I was 14.
She kicked you out of the house when you were 14 years old?
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
To my grandmother, my great-grandmother.
So you got
my
back?
My angel, yeah.
You went back to your great-grandma?
Yes.
So did life stabilize for you a little bit then?
I wouldn't say that it stabilized. I did have this very familial support. Again, this is my great-grandmother, right? And having to navigate the world for so long with just me and my siblings, kind of having like, you know, this secret relationship and understanding that, hey, it's us against the world kind of thing. We probably didn't make all the best choices. You know, my great grandmother did the best that she could.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I wanted to break a cycle, right? I didn't want my children to fall in the same statistics that I fell into.
The executive director of MATC's Fast Funds, Bria Burris, talks about becoming a single mother at 17.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Bria Burris. She's the executive director of MATC's Fast Fund. So let's talk about you. What kind of choices did you make that you look back and think, oh, that wasn't so great?
To be honest, the more we age, we have anxiety of going outside. And I just think back at some of the things that we did as kids that were very dangerous and say, what were we doing? How are we still living with some of the things that we did? It's just typical teen stuff, you know, hanging out with friends, breaking curfew, you know, skipping classes, you know, kind of just making the rules as we went because we felt like we knew it all.
You mentioned skipping classes. Did you stay in school?
No, I ended up dropping out of high school at 17. And that's because I had became pregnant with my first daughter.
So now you're pregnant?
Yes.
You're not married?
Nope.
You're not in high school?
Nope.
What do you do? I mean, that's got to be a tough life decision for you.
Absolutely. I mean, at that age, realizing that you're pregnant and now you are in charge or responsible for someone else, that hits you like a ton of bricks. And, you know, I did have support around that time. But when everybody goes away, you're stuck with that reality because it is yours to hold. Right. But I will say that having my daughter at that age did ground me and make me grow up exponentially faster. It matured me a lot because I wanted to break a cycle. Right. I didn't want my children to fall in the same statistics that I fell into, like being a child of a drug addicted parents, plural, dropping out of school. Like I wanted to provide a level of love, support and stability that wouldn't have them going into the foster system. Right. That wouldn't have them having to face sexual abuse or mistreatment. So it just gave me more responsibility, and I took that head on. Like, I wanted to again, break that cycle.
But you did make a big mistake.
Absolutely, yeah.
What happened?
So when I was 19, I had a possession of marijuana charge, and I always thought that I was doing the right thing to just make sure I provide for my kids, right? Didn't have a high school diploma, had worked on my GED a couple times, but responsibilities, you know, took that out of my range for a bit of time. I ended up getting this possession of marijuana charge and almost put my kids in those situations that I didn't want them to be in.
You were charged with a felony, though.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but was it a big amount of marijuana that you had, or was it, I mean, were you dealing, or were you,
yes.
Was it just,
you yeah, were dealing? Yeah, I've never dealing. Used okay. drugs. That has always really been a fear of mine. Again, having two drug addicted parents, it was always a fear of mine to like get hooked on drugs or anything like that.
So you were selling it?
Yes. To provide a living for myself okay. and my children. No employment, no high school diploma, just making away from what I did know.
Did you plead to that, or did you have to go through court and were you convicted?
I did make a plea. I negotiated terms to be able to have the felony expunged after I completed my probation and all the court mandated things like getting my GED and paying my restitution and not getting any new charges. I did probation for 2 years. After all of that was done, I did try to go back and get it removed from my record so that I could start on the right foot now. And the message I got from the courts were continual denials. What they stated was the judge at the time did not have the authority to say that it could be expunged.
Even though that was part of the court order at the time.
It was a part of the court order. It was a part of the plea deal. They said that he didn't have the authority to do so. So I spent the next, 4 years or more with that felony.
That had to be heartbreaking. When you had the expectation and the court had promised you that.
Yep. Devastating.
Did it make you angry?
Absolutely. I felt like my attorney had failed me, because if the judge did not have the right to do that, then how did you let me agree to this? I felt that, you know, if the judge didn't have the authority to do it, why would he agree to it? You know, like, why didn't the district attorney step in? Why didn't someone step in and say, hey, you can't do this? So I kind of felt like I was sold off in a way to get me to sign a plea deal and move on to the next case. So I had gotten to a point where I needed affordable housing. You can't get affordable housing with having a drug felony on your record. So I will be denied housing that would keep me and my family stable.
And you had how many kids at this point?
Two. Schooling. You know, you can't get financial aid or the Pell Grant with a drug felony. So I couldn't go back to school because I was in school at the time when I caught the felony. But it just hindered a lot of things. Employment.
Well, it's like a vicious circle.
Housing opportunities from private landlords or like state aid.
Yeah.
So I was walking free, but it was still like a life sentence because that was the first thing people saw. That was the first thing that people read.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
By the end of the day, I'm picking my children back up, either going back to MATC's campus to complete a class or get them back on the road.
Rhea Burris from MATC's Fast Funds talks about being a felon and facing homelessness.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with the executive director of MATC's Fast Fund, Rhea Burris. It's almost like a vicious circle. Once you're in it, how do you get out of it?
Right. I think that's the problem with the system, and what I do see some of our like elected leaders and stuff trying to change is seeing the person and providing the necessary support rather than just jumping into criminal because they know it's much harder to get that person out of that cycle once they're in it.
So here you are. You're in your early 20s. You got a couple kids.
Yep.
You want to go back to school.
Yeah.
But you can't fund it. You can't get affordable housing. How did you live? How did you survive at this point?
I went into trades, if you will. Took a carpentry course and learned how to do carpentry. And people will let you work with your hands. They like laborers. So I was able to at least do that kind of work. So I did things like hanging drywall, painting, laying carpets, doing like ceramic tile, that sort of thing.
Those are handy things to know how to do, actually, though.
It helps when I first bought my house, though. So yeah, it definitely helped to have that skill set.
But at that time, while you were doing that, while you were raising your kids, you wanted to go back to school. You lost your home again, too.
Yeah, that was kind of a cycle and period of time in my life. I lost my great-grandmother. That took me in, like, a huge depression because she was the yes when everybody else said no. Like, she was the support for me and my children when I needed. And so losing her unexpectedly kind of sent me in a spiral. I found myself drinking heavily, not attempting to go to work and things like that until I look up and 6 months had passed and I'm like, she wouldn't be happy with this. What's the plan next? So using savings, I decided, hey, I'm just going to go back to school and do something that gives me purpose, that I'm happy doing. So I enrolled back into MATC, knowing that I would have to pay for my classes out of pocket, but saying hopefully figure it out as I get through it. I didn't have a complete plan, but it was a plan nonetheless. And it was a brave step, to be honest, to take with small children. And I didn't. And today, looking back, it was the best decision that I had made.
But you did end up in a situation where you're homeless again while you're going to school.
And the homelessness was simply because I couldn't get the Pell Grant. So I had to pay for my classes at MATC out of pocket. And that meant if I'm paying for it out of pocket, then some of my bills aren't getting paid. And I could only do that for so long if I'm going to school full time and I'm not working.
So you ended up living in Illinois, pretty far out, in a place called Morris.
Yeah.
That's what, southwest of Joliet? That's got to be 3.5 hours away.
It was. Coincidentally, I had met a very beautiful soul, my partner of 8 years, Jennifer Alonzo. And she's seen the struggle that I was facing just trying to, like, be successful and show up for my children. And the decision came that, hey, if you can't do it up there, then, like, bring the kids here and let me be your support.
But you didn't drop out of school. You were still going to school at MATC.
No, I did not drop out. Nope.
How did you do that? Because, again, Morris, Illinois, it's not like it's right over the state border, which in itself would be quite a commute. you continued to go to school.
Yeah.
Living in Morris, Illinois, and coming back up to Milwaukee.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very tough period, to be honest.
How did you do that? That had to take a toll out of you.
Oh, no, it was a really big toll that was being taken, because it wasn't one that I was just taking on myself. My children were also taking that on as well, because each morning I would wake them up at 3 o'clock, get them ready. Let's all get ready for school. We'll be on the road for 3 hours. I'll take them to school. And then I would go and take a nap in the parking lot at the college.
In your car?
In my car before my classes would start. And then by the end of the day, I'm picking my children back up, either going back to MATC's campus to complete a class or catch up on some work or do something with the numerous student orgs that I had been involved in, get them back on the road for another 3 hour drive back to Morris and turn around and do it each day.
How long did you keep up that schedule?
I want to say roughly a year.
Wow.
Year and a half, somewhere around there. Yeah, it was tough. It was absolutely tough, but...
What impact did that have on the kids?
It was heavy. My children were tired.
You had to be exhausted.
Yeah, my children were tired. So eventually, I just enrolled them in school in Morris to make it easier on them, because it's my journey, right? It's not for them to have to take that on as well. So I ended up just enrolling them in school in Morris, and then I just commuted back and forth whenever I could. And a lot of that was daily. And then eventually it became like, hey, I will go to Illinois on weekends.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Y'all are not going to hire me. I'm a felon. And he was like, we don't care about that.
Bria Burris, the executive director of MATC's Fast Fund, talks about how she was hired in spite of being a convicted felon.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Bria Burris. She's the executive director of MATC's Fast Fund. You really wanted to get that degree.
I did. And I knew it would take me somewhere, and I knew it would fill my own bucket. I wanted to show my kids that it was possible. I'm one of 11 children. I'm the only college graduate, and I wanted my kids to be able to see that. I wanted them to know that it was possible. But it was also the Fast Fund.
When you found Fast Fund.
Yep. They stepped into my life with the oddest story, actually. It was a gentleman that came into my human service class, and he was talking about the election that was coming up. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, there's a referendum on the ballot for legalizing marijuana. So my antennas is up, right? Because I was like, hey, I've been stuck with this felony forever. And I've seen in some states where if they legalize it, then they decriminalize it and remove convictions, right? So I wanted to know more. And after the class, I went and spoke to him and just said, hey, I need to do volunteer hours for my classes. And I would like to do that with you. I don't know much about elections, but if you can teach me, I'm willing to do the rest of the work myself. He taught me what he knew based off of that election. I educated myself more. And then I went and did nonpartisan voter education in MATC classrooms, telling people about the election. I found that I really liked this because I was speaking to people that looked like me and convincing them that voting was important. But I was putting it in terms in which that they could understand, that left out the political jargon, left out the party politics, and just connected what was on the ballot to real issues that they faced. And I always got a very positive response. Some instructors will say, hey, I'll give you 10 minutes in my class to do a presentation. And by the time the 10 minutes I'm looking over, it's like, I gotta go. They're like, no, keep going, keep going. Because they saw that the students were also very much engaged. So I really liked doing that. And so this gentleman ended up saying that he could get me hired to do this work. And this would have been great, right? Because yeah. I could use a job, I could use some money, and I'm already here on campus doing the work anyhow. But I was afraid to tell him that I was a felon. So I continued doing my classroom presentations, but I would not respond to his calls about this potential employment. And so just so happened, he sees me in the hallway. He's like, I've been calling you. And I was just like, yeah, you know, I'll go over there and see him. And he was introducing me to Michael Rosen, the founder of Fast Fund. And so I go over to his office and I probably talked myself through how I was going to have this conversation with him. And when I just walked through the door, I was like, look, you know, I'm going to still do the work, but y'all are not going to hire me. I'm a felon. And he was like, we don't care about that. He's like, wait, what was it for? And I told him, I was like, you know, it was a possession of marijuana charge when I was 19 or whatever. And he's like, look, we do not care about that. And ended up getting me hired. Has spoken to me about possibly getting somebody to look at the case, because he did ask me in detail, like, what was it? Like, you know, and I told him, I was like, look, it should have been expunged, but I'm stuck with it because they did this wrong, what have you. And not really thinking he could pull it off, but he did. And
what was that day like when you found out that they finally expunged that from your record?
Mike called me and he was like, we got it done. Like, your felony is dismissed. And I was just like, not believing it. I C-capped it. It was still there. So I'm just like, okay, well, you know, I guess we'll see, because I'm used to, you know, systems failing. I'm used to something falling apart. But the day the letter came in the mail, that hit a lot differently, because here it is in writing and I'm calling. They're like, oh, yeah, it'll be off your like record, you know, very soon. It just takes some time. That is the day that that reality set in.
And you knew your life was changed at that point.
Absolutely. I knew my life was changed because the felony, pardon me, had hindered me from so many things that would have given my family the access, and not only giving us access, but just the relief we needed, you know, like being able to not have to pay for my classes out of pocket. That was huge. Being able to go and rent a home and not have them do a background check and see that I had this previous drug felony and automatically deny my application. Mind you had to put in applications and pay all these application fees. So it was just, it opened so many doors, right? Employment. Like, I would have been able to get like Section 8 housing or affordable housing, like low income housing, if I needed it at that time, right? Because this was no longer on my record.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Well, I'm going to go to school to kind of do some of the work that I would be doing. We made the decision to say, hey, let's just do it.
Bria Burris tells us how she went from being a volunteer to the executive director of MATC Fast Fund.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Bria Burris. She's the executive director of MATC's Fast Fund. So now you're working for Fast Funds.
Yes.
You're working on your degree.
Yes.
And you got it.
Yeah. 2020, last year of school for me. I was at my wit's end. I was burning out with the traveling and everything. And this is right at the point COVID hits. And honestly, it was a relief for me because I didn't know how much more I had in the tank to keep the back and forth going and juggling all the things that I was doing. But I was able to do it, right? And I did it with support. And that support, again, just came in the way of the Fast Fund, just because what they did for me was not financial. It was the push that I needed. It was the hope that I needed to push me forward. Like, I wanted to do it so much more because these people believed in me, right? Like, I wanted to show them that they didn't waste their time, that this wasn't, you know, a mistake that they were making by believing in me, investing in me, right? I ended up graduating MATC with a 4.0 while doing all that traveling, doing my internship, which I did at the Fast Fund.
Raising kids.
Yes. I did have support from my partner, though, to help me with my kids, to make their lives easier as well.
But now you're at Fast Fund, and they really liked you because you became the executive director.
Yeah, very unexpectedly, to be honest. After graduating from MATC, I had applied for a job at SDC, and I didn't get that job. They hadn't called me back. And this was during COVID. It was a rental housing program. And they hadn't called me back. And I knew I was qualified for it because I had the skills to do the work. And I reached out to Mike Rosen, the Fast Fund president. And I was like, Mike, you know, like, I need a job. You know, I applied for this job for SEC. I know I'm overqualified. Like, I know I can do the work. But they haven't given me a call back. he made a call and then like within 15 minutes had an interview and had the job. And so that, again, was somebody believing in me, providing support, not just financial, but beyond that. And I ended up creating a relationship between SEC and the FAST Fund to help MATC students get their assistance from SEC during COVID. And then I ended up leaving SEC and going over to Community Advocates. And then from Community Advocates, I went over to Housing Authority. None of these jobs I applied for, by the way. It was people at these jobs outside of SEC that contacted me based off of
your reputation.
Yeah, based off of, you know.
But that's the best way to get a job is when you're not looking for it.
That is true. That is very true. But yeah, they called me and I accepted those opportunities. I decided to leave Housing Authority, I want to say in 23. And I didn't have a job. But I knew that that wasn't the place. I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to school, but I'm going to take a break. Had just purchased my house. And I said, I'm going to take a break, do some stuff around my house, and then I'll enroll in school at, you know, 6 months or whatever. That turned into a year. I'm locked and loaded. I'm ready, you know, got my classes. I'm going to go to UIC. I'm going to study public policy. And our executive director at the time, Elizabeth Franchek of the FAST Fund, because I'm on the FAST Fund's board at this time as the board secretary. And she sent out an email or a text to us or something. She reached out to all the board members individually. And she was just basically letting us know that she was stepping away. She was going to work with the Believe in Students National Group, and she was going to move to the Northwoods with her now husband. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, congratulations. And in my mind, I'm going to just need to help Mike, you know, as, you know, his support as we did when I interned with him in the early days. And I'm very much prepared to do that. I'm not thinking full time because I said I'm going to school. So a couple board members are thinking like, hey, Bria, what are you thinking about doing it? I was like, well, yeah, you know, I'll help Mike for sure. I won't be able to do it every day, but, you know, I'll be there to help for sure. You know, just to keep the organization running. And I think they just had different plans. I think maybe having conversations amongst themselves about, like, maybe the potential of me being the ED. Because Mike had thought about this, I want to say 2019. He was saying that, you know, look, I'm supposed to be retired. I need to get somebody to be the executive director. And at that time, he was like, hey, that can be you, Bria. I just need to get some money so we can get an executive director. And I'm thinking, like, this guy is crazy. I'm like, I'm no executive director. But, yeah, they tapped me to kind of help support the organization interimly. And I said no the first couple times because I'm, like, I'm enrolled in school. And, again, I'm no ED. So I'm just like, in a space that, hey, well, I'm going to go to school to kind of do some of the work that I would be doing that I can do right now. And I could do this at an organization that I truly love. Right. And so I had discussed it with my partner at the time and we made the decision to say, hey, let's just do it. Mind you, this is us still in two different states. Her in Illinois, me in Milwaukee. So that we needed to figure out for sure. But we ultimately decided, yes, you know, you need to take the opportunity. So I did the role for 6 months interimly and then put in my application and had to go through the entire hiring process. And from what I understand, up aside some very competitive candidates. But I think ultimately I came out on top because of my history as a student.
Which is, I think, the important part. Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Hearing the stories, I can very much relate to them. If it's not similar to my own or something I've personally experienced, I know somebody who has experienced it.
Bria Burris tells us how her past helps her to connect with students through MATC's FAST Fund.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Bria Burris. She's the executive director of MATC's FAST Fund. The young people you are helping to get their degrees have similar backgrounds to what you've been going through. I mean, every story's different. But I'm sure on a daily basis, as executive director of FAST Funds, you're hearing stories similar to yours.
Every single day. Every single day.
And how is that helping you to help them? Whereas maybe some of these other people, fancy smancy degrees or whatever, if they had been in that position, they wouldn't have the same insight as you.
Education takes you a long way, but lived experience takes you a whole lot further, right? Being an alumni of MATC, being a former recipient, hearing the stories, I can very much relate to them. If it's not similar to my own, something I've personally experienced, I know somebody who has experienced it. So it helps me be able to navigate and also advocate for those students, right? I take pride in sharing my story, right? When you reached out to me, I was like, absolutely. I volunteered to go in to jails, right? I volunteer to speak at organizations because I want to be the poster child of you can do it too, right? Like you are not alone. There are resources out there. There are people that believe in you, right? Take a chance on yourself. Don't give up. Don't find yourself making poor decisions like I did because I thought that was the only way, right? So connecting students to resources, I take pride in all of that. You know, I take pride in saying, hey, I'm the executive director and I used to be a recipient.
Are some of the kids who come in for FAST Funds, are they surprised?
I think a lot of them have seen my photo on the MATC website from being on the board, which I stepped down in June, or in the hallway at the campus. They see my proclamations from our county chairwoman, Marcelia Nichols, see news articles about me, and they're like, I read about your story. Like, I want to be there one day. And I think it's encouraging to them, right, to see somebody who was born in prison, who came from drug-addicted parents, who dropped out of school, who was a teen parent, gotten a felony and turned all of these things into like passion and a mission.
Did you ever think when you got thrown out of the house by your mom and you were 14 years old, you would be in a position like this today?
I don't want to sound arrogant, but yeah, because one, I'm stubborn. And again, that rebellious nature that was, you know, instilled in me when my grandmother told me that my birthday had significance and meaning. Like, you know, I've always kind of had that spirit of I'm not going to fail, right? I'm not going to let these things keep me in this space, right? Like all of these things that I was born into keep me in that space.
You're also ambitious.
I am very.
What's next for you? I mean, will you continue to work with FAST Funds or do you have your eye on something else?
Libby, yeah, my focus right now is fully 100% the FAST Fund. But I am a community leader and activist by heart. Right. Currently, now I'm not focused on anything but just like stabilizing, you know, my life and just the FAST Fund's mission.
Bria, do you think someday you could be mayor of Milwaukee?
I wouldn't. No, I think that's too high of an achievement for myself. I like to. I'm more of the activist. I like to be in a spot, getting my hands dirty, working with the people. Saying things that others dare say. And I don't think someone in that position will be able to do those things. So,
well, I don't know, Bria Burris. I think we're going to hear a lot more about you.
Well, hopefully, and hopefully good things, because my mission is just to continue spreading my background, advocating, connecting people to resources, and just building, you know, a sense of community in Milwaukee, right?
Bria Burris, thanks so much for telling your story today.
Thank you for having me, Libby.
We've been talking with Bria Burris, and she revealed how she started out with a tough life of being born in a prison, became a single mother at 17, and in spite of being homeless and a convicted felon, went on to become the executive director of MATC's Fast Fund. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Bria, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.